Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well. Today, we're kicking off a three-episode series with a back-to-school theme. For us, this symbolizes several things. First, it's almost that time of year in Michigan where K-12 and university students head back to school. But in many parts of our country and world, students have already been back to school for a few weeks or even a month. But we also like to think of this as sort of a back-to-in-person focus. We're seeing more and more of our clients head back to offices, at least in part, which means the possibility of a return to in-person learning. So we thought we'd take this opportunity to spend some time focusing on ILT or classroom or in-person, whatever term you want to use, and other digital learning, but where the delivery is focused more on in-person. Today we're going to talk about developing and growing a culture of learning. And then in our next podcast, we'll share practically some of our very favorite in-person activities and learning experience ideas. And then we're going to end this series discussing how to use podcasting to create a more robust learning experience. All right, so let's dig right into our topic of creating a culture of learning. And today our guest is just me. So this topic is near and dear to my heart, and I quickly realized I probably talk right over a guest. So I just decided to share more personally why this topic is so important to me. And we're going to do kind of three segments. We're going to first talk about really defining what a culture of learning is, and then we're going to talk about what values and attitudes you need in your organization to make sure that this really happens. And then lastly, I do have about six really practical tips that I want to share for those of you that are practitioners, just ways that you can implement them. So here we go. Let's take a look and dig into kind of a definition of what is a culture of learning. And I think it means different things to different people, and I'm not sure there's one right definition, but I think it's helpful to explore what some of those definitions are and make sure we're getting the full scope of the concept. So that's where we're going to begin. And then, like I said, we'll wrap up with some practical ideas. According to an ATD 2016 report, and I'm going to reference this at the end of the podcast, it'll be in the show notes too, a culture of learning is one in which employees continuously seek, share, and apply new knowledge and skills to improve individual and organizational performance. And I think this definition summarizes well what we commonly think of as a culture of learning. It's an organization where employees are genuinely interested in learning more so they can perform better. And whether that's focused on their specific craft or other abilities like leadership, in both cases, that's their goal. So SHRM and some other groups like to call this, you've probably heard the term, like a growth mindset. And I should also mention here that this can be formal learning opportunities, but more often than not, honestly, a true culture of learning is obvious because of all the informal learning opportunities both offered and also accepted by those in the organization, which leads to, I guess, what I would call another really important piece. It's not just the excitement and the desire to acquire new information or skills, but it's the desire to share newly acquired knowledge, skills, or attitudes with others. We all know that we learn better when we've not just acquired that new knowledge or even applied it, but when we teach it to others. And when we do that, we re-examine it in different contexts. So that's kind of at the heart of a desire to improve, right? So in order to have a culture of learning, I think it's important to note that this implies not just at the individual level. I mean, not if we're sharing, obviously. So it's at an individual, a team, or department, and the organizational level. So this concept has to be embedded at all levels. So far then, we have two key components to our definition. It's obviously the desire to continuously learn or a growth mindset, and that is being shared across all levels of an organization. Which really segues us nicely into the other critical component of a culture of learning, and I don't think it's going to be a surprise to any of you, but unfortunately, I also think that this is the part of the definition where organizations fail the most. This culture of learning has to be supported by leaders with a strong vision and a strategic plan that supports organizational members and guides them towards this collective goal of a culture of learning. So an article from the Harvard Business Review, it's roughly, I think, 2018, points out the single biggest driver of business impact is the strength of an organization's learning culture. But unfortunately, Only 10% of organizations have managed to create them, with just 20% of employees demonstrating effective learning behaviors at work. And you can argue with the numbers, and that's fine. I mean, this article was pre-COVID, 2018, but the point remains that failure to create a culture of learning almost always lies with leadership. And I don't think this is deliberate. I mean, more often than not, it's a lack of understanding of how to tie learning to the overall mission and vision of the company. And a strong culture of learning isn't just supported. It has to be planned, implemented, and then also measured by leadership. So we have three key components in a truly robust definition of a culture of learning. One, all levels of the organization, individual, team or department, and company-wide seek new knowledge, skills, and attitudes. And two, they seek formal and informal ways of sharing and applying this new information. And then three, there's a strategic plan designed by leadership. It's implemented, supported, and measured across the organization. And I think a really nice way to wrap up this segment is this quote by Michael Molinaro, Vice President of Talent Management at New York Life Insurance Company. And he said, supporting a learning culture means trying to make each moment about learning and establishing the intention to learn in every interaction, every relationship, and every chance to lead. So now that we have a better understanding of the components of a culture of learning, let's move on. Let's talk about how to improve and grow the one you have. And let's face it, everyone has a culture of learning. And if you think you don't, it's probably because it's not very good. But never fear, I've got some good ideas and some resources to share with you for minds way smarter than my own to help you improve your current culture. So to start, I think, you know, if we think about our first segment, we talked a lot about the need for leadership planning and support. And that's most important. And so let's first consider the values and attitudes that we need to have present in our organization in order to create this vibrant culture of learning. And I think there's really sort of two key components to these values and attitudes. And if you need to work on these are ways you can improve your culture of learning. So I'll be completely honest, it really wasn't until I had read Adam Grant's book, Think Again, that I felt I had the real answer to how to improve a culture of learning. So in several past career lives, I've been a part of a couple initiatives to help companies really develop a culture of learning. And I'd brought a lot of practical ideas, a lot of activities to put in place. But in all cases, I really saw the success or failure never hinged on, you know, my amazing activities or whatever. But it always rose and fell with the leadership of the company. And it wasn't just their support or maybe kind of their waning support over time as more pressing issues came up. It was something else, and I couldn't really put my finger on it. So I've read, you know, a lot of articles about this, obviously, and done some study. And a lot of those suggest things like putting ego aside, not being afraid of failure or embarrassment, being willing to admit you're wrong in order to learn and move ahead. To me, like, that always just felt like I was treating the symptoms instead of the actual disease, really getting at the root of it. So then I read Adam Grant's book, Think Again. And in episode 16, actually, of the Learning Well podcast, we did a book review. So if you're interested in more than just my passing mention here, go back and listen to episode 16. But towards the end of the book, Grant devotes all of chapter 10 to this topic of culture of learning in the workplace. And he states that the foundation of a learning culture is psychological safety, which he defines as being able to take risks without fear of reprisal. Evidence shows that when teams have psychological safety, they're more willing to acknowledge their own mistakes and figure out how to prevent them moving forward. They're also more comfortable raising problems and exploring innovative solutions. So, and to me, it's in this exploring that the learning happens. And later he states, the goal in a learning culture is to welcome these kinds of experiments, which, again, he was sort of referencing an illustration in that chapter, to make rethinking so familiar that it becomes routine and people don't hesitate to pitch new ideas. And to me, this is really the foundation, because people know that they will always need to rethink and improve. They're driven, really. They desire to learn more so they can bring something new or improved. And there's not this fear of, if I bring a new idea, what does that say about my past idea? And did I fail at that? And was that a mistake? So to me, that was kind of a light bulb moment when I read that chapter, because I felt like if we can create organizations or departments where people feel safe enough, we're not talking about accepting poor behavior or poor product or poor skills, but we're talking about the ability to allow people to say, I think I could do better than that. Or let me go back and rethink based on what I know now, or I've done some more learning and research. I have a better idea. That's when we start to create this philosophy, this culture of learning that then from there flows all kinds of practical things that we can talk about later. But there's also kind of this rub there. I mean, if you don't work in this kind of organization, if you work in this performance-only, prove-it kind of organization, then Grant would argue that you don't really have a culture of learning and you're most likely not going to have one. And I do think that's discouraging, but I also know there are plenty of amazing organizations that are constantly working to implement, you know, this kind of attitude and culture. And I would say especially post-COVID, with the battle to engage and hire and retain new employees that's going on right now, a culture of learning is one of the things that is key to many of them. And we'll talk about that in just a few minutes too. But I'd also encourage you to be an example in your area. I mean, maybe you can't influence the entire organization, but we know a lot of grassroots change happens if you can just influence with that attitude in your department and your team, whatever that might be. So again, the first kind of way we improve is by setting the correct values, the correct philosophy as a leadership team, and then flowing right out of that really is my second tip here, which is to lead by example. So if you're listening and you're a leader in your organization, start by implementing this mindset in your sphere of influence. Encourage rethinking, new ideas, practice what you preach, right? And again, everyone has someone watching them. So whether you think you do or not, somebody is always watching and it's your opportunity to be a leader in that area. So read more, talk about what you're reading or your, you know, videos you're watching or podcasts you're listening to. Bring those to lunch, reference one when someone has a question or show them where you found the answer online. Share a website, you know, refer to articles when you present or lead meetings. One of the things I really wanted to do in this podcast was point out to you where I found some of this information for the sake of you being able to go and learn more on your own. So make sure you do that with your team too, and take on, and it's not just knowledge, right? Like take on a new task or try to learn a new skill and then share your progress with your team, which again can be humbling. But the idea here, right, is that we're all encouraging everyone to rethink, to relearn, and to be willing to admit when we're not quite sure. Because when you practice what you preach, when you demonstrate this, it indicates to the entire organization that A, learning is really important, and B, it's practiced by everyone. So I think one of the best examples I can think of this is a frequent guest that we have on our podcast, Dr. Jerry Zanstra. We'd give him a very hard time about his titles, just because he's fun to tease, but he's always got like a stack of four or five books going on. He's always letting you know about stuff he's learned, sending you articles, whatever. And it really sets the tone for the fact that this is encouraged and accepted and not something that you have to squeeze in after work or, and obviously a lot of it is on your own time, but it's a great way to lead an example. Okay, so to recap then, the two key ways to improve the attitudes and values around a culture of learning are set the value by leadership, encourage rethinking, making mistakes and learning, and then two, to lead by example. So our third segment, we're going to focus on practical tips for improving the culture of learning. So these are the things I've worked on with organizations to create. But again, I don't think you can really get to these until you have that foundation set by leadership. So that's why we saved these towards the end of the podcast. These are very practical. You're going to find they're very learner-driven, very people-centric tips. The first one for me is to create a library, which in the digital world we live in just sounds so archaic. So let me explain. In some ways, this can be physical or tangible. So it might not work in every size of organization, but if you're a small to a medium-sized business or even a small department in a large organization, set up a small corner of your department or like a bookshelf. It's not so much about the physical books as it is the signal of we expect you to continue to learn about your craft or what industry you're in or even beyond that. And we'll talk more about that in a minute, but just learning in general. But it also doesn't have to be physical. So I think that physical sign there is, especially I think in a small business or a smaller organization, it's a good reminder because you spend so much of your day hustling, right, to get the work done. It's a good physical reminder, but it can also be digital. So in one organization I worked in, we had a shared Google Doc, and people could link to like books and videos. They could link to podcasts. And we also gave them, it was just a shared document. So you could write reviews, which improved the experience for the next person, right? I mean, you think about all these, one in particular, recipe websites, there's always about 4,000 comments after them where people share, well, I changed this or tweaked this or I liked this or I didn't. That's what we're talking about creating here, really, is this shared curated content, essentially, but you're making your organization stronger because you're listening to the opinions and sharing what you've learned with the next person. I realize that Google Doc or, you know, a shared document of any kind is pretty simple. And I know that a lot of large organizations have that functionality within an LMS. And honestly, I think this is what is really driving a lot of like LXP implementation right now is the ability to rate and review. So to me, it doesn't really matter, but I just don't let the technology hold you up. Don't wait because you have to contact your IT department to get something set up on your LMS, or do what you can. Share, set up some kind of shared document. And again, this is informal learning, right? The second tip I have is using your traditional LMS or LXP and not just relying on it for content that's pushed out from the learning team, right? That formal information, knowledge, skills, testing, whatever that's pushed out, but it's pulled. So a lot of these systems are really impressive now. You know, they're predictive. They use AI. I mean, if you think Amazon, you order something and the next thing you know, you get all of these. You might also like this. And that's predictive based on past purchases. We can do that in an LMS. And it happens a lot. And there's more opportunities for curated content too. So I think there's opportunity to both set up something simple, as I mentioned, but also to make use of your company-wide LMS. I would go back to my earlier comments and argue that what's most important to me really is that it's open for anyone to contribute. If you have to fill out a form with some information and then it goes to the LMS administrator who eventually posts it somewhere, you've really kind of defeated the whole purpose of informal learning at that point, which is why sometimes I argue for something simpler, like a Google Doc. You need a facilitator, obviously. It can't be the Wild West of people posting whatever they want and commenting whatever they want. But why not allow everyone to share good articles, podcasts, video, other learning experiences, and comment? And then I think in addition to just that, we can comment, but let's also create other spaces, social learning spaces, whether it's your messaging system, we happen to use Slack, or whether you create discussion forums in your more traditional LXP or LMS, you're letting people discuss what they learned, sharing new ideas and creating new learning right there just with that social learning. So another idea I had was just to keep things fun. Socialize the informal learning within your organization. So like I mentioned, in our company, we use Slack, but any internal communication tool would work. It's sort of a digital water cooler, right? Places where people can share interests. We happen to have a couple different ones. One is focused on reading. So team members post their favorite nonfiction, fiction, industry, other books. It gets kind of passionate sometimes, discussions that they have over books. Sometimes we do book swaps, which has been kind of fun too. And I'm a big believer that the more you learn outside of your work, the more you bring that creativity and innovation into your work. So I would always argue for that. Sometimes we share links to audio versions, and it doesn't have to be limited to this. Like, it could just be a digital space for informal learning. Everyone who's interested in learning the guitar, you know, or our company gamers are sharing ideas. Sports fans are talking about point spreads, or we share recipes. Again, you have to balance that, obviously, with your goal of being at work to do what you need to do. But the idea here is that when there is this informal learning that's available, people might jump in and out of just for a couple minutes a day or a week, but you're cultivating those beliefs and those values again, that what you're learning does bring value to your workplace every day. So another tip is to reward continuous learning. So I'm making my plug for informal learning here. From the same Harvard Business Review article, it states that the average employee has only 24 minutes a week for formal learning. And I think most of that even is focused on short-term results, like immediate learning to improve performance, compliance-based, things like that. So, and that's not to say that continuous learning doesn't improve results, but it's more of a long-term play, right? That continuous learning, innovation, and creativity are all boosted by that. So it's not just rewarding the five people who were first to complete the fire safety modules or whatever that is, but you need to reward continuous learning. It's about that long-term appreciation and fostering of the employee who comes to you with a new idea, or maybe they have questions based on an article they read or a podcast they listened to, and they've been thinking about it. Those are also the things that need to be rewarded. Well, my last tip here, and it's going to sound really obvious, but it's pretty important. Be smart when you hire. And one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given was by someone who worked in HR at a manufacturing company, but it was really innovative. They had a strong culture of learning, and everyone was expected to contribute to that, no matter what role they were hired into. And this person told me to hire curious people and to make that a key value that we look for. And we try to uncover that in a variety of ways in our interviewing process. So I want to share kind of two ways that we try to find curious people when we interview. The first is pretty straightforward, obviously, when you ask interview questions. But one thing we ask is, what's one new thing the candidate has learned recently, and to tell us about it. And it doesn't have to be work-related, and it often isn't. But this accomplishes more than one thing, honestly, for us. So first we learn, you know, about their outside activities and interests, which creates a commonality almost immediately and a sense of belonging. But more importantly, it helps us figure out if they're a curious person. We ask them to share what led them to be curious about it, how they learned it. You know, did they talk to somebody? Did they just like plunge in and start trying something? Did they listen to a podcast? I will say this can be a little intimidating to a candidate, because when someone asks you what you're learning recently, they kind of look around like, am I supposed to talk about this industry and like whip out six articles and some sort of dissertation they just read? But we try to set the tone, you know, again, with this being kind of informal, and then it's really fun to hear their answers. But the second hiring practice we have, and I will admit this is probably unique to a more creative industry that we're in, but we assign short-term hiring projects. So when a candidate has reached a certain point, and again, this is on the learning team, learning and development teams, but when they've reached a certain point in the process, we assign them to complete a small project and we pay them for it, regardless of if they're hired or not. But we care about the outcome. Obviously, that allows them to demonstrate skills, but we care a lot more about the process. So what kinds of questions did they ask while they were working on it? What did they do when they had incomplete information? Did they go above and beyond the requirements, and in what ways? All of this process kind of helps us determine if they're curious or not. And oftentimes, again, I think this makes a candidate very nervous, and we'll see a list of questions. Well, I'm not sure about this. I don't have full information on that. What about this? What about that? I was thinking about this. And I think they probably feel like, well, I've definitely failed this. And when in fact, those are things we're looking for. We're looking for their curiosity and the questions that they're asking to make it a better product. So truly curious people really appreciate this opportunity, even if it makes them a little uncomfortable, and it kind of sets the tone for the type of community organization they'd be working in. We've seen a lot of success with this model, and I will also say it shows up every year when we evaluate our culture of learning and the kind of growth that we've had. Hiring those kind of people make a huge difference. So to wrap up, I would be remiss if I didn't spend just a little time talking about how we can measure the effects of a robust culture of learning. The first thing I would do is point you to episode 18, where we talk about a learning scorecard, something that our company has developed, because measuring a culture of learning, honestly, is no different than measuring any specific learning initiative. You just have to pick different metrics. So take a listen to that episode 18 podcast. You can also schedule a demo. But once you've done that, I just wanted to point out probably four or five key metrics that you might want to consider measuring over the course of a year or years to justify cultivating that culture of learning. Number one is to measure employee yearly evaluations and improvements made tied to their objectives from the year before. I mean, this is pretty obvious, right? But they have certain goals and objectives that are tied to business goals and objectives. And so in a more, I'd say, higher level view, take a look at employee evaluations. Another one is to measure employee satisfaction and retention. Like, obviously, there's a lot of factors here, not all tied to a learning culture. But studies are increasingly showing younger employees will stay at a company longer and are looking for companies or organizations where they feel there's a strong and clear path for development within their current organization. And to be honest, they'll leave if they don't find that. So the third metric, I think, is there's some obvious direct ties to measuring continuous improvement in whatever industry your company works in. So did time to task decrease, or maybe customer satisfaction improved? Those all can be measured and tied to learning. Again, they can be tied to specific learning initiatives where you're designing learning experiences or training tied to those specific tasks. But at a higher level, you can also measure whether the overall culture of the company is fostering that desire to continuously improve. So another metric, another thing is just, I'd say, department or individual surveys to determine new skills. So this is pretty wide open, but I mean, take a survey of your department. What are new things people have picked up on through the course of the year that wasn't measured anywhere because it wasn't on our radar? That's where a lot of that informal learning will inform that. And I think once you have kind of a good baseline, that's a pretty cool thing to build on each year, is to look for what skills or what knowledge or what attitudes are being improved as people are informally learning from each other. And then this is kind of an interesting one. You can also look, this is my fifth sort of metric I think you would want to consider. Look at your learning team's formal training costs. Are these costs going down, or maybe not going down, but are they being redirected as informal learning occurs across the organization, which is requiring less formal learning in maybe one area, because that informal learning is really picking up, people are sharing and growing. And that's amazing, because then those dollars can be directed in a different way. So those are just five quick metrics that I think you really want to consider when you're measuring the ROI specifically of a culture of learning, and it can be done. So I definitely point you to, again, the podcast as we discuss that, if you're interested in learning more about how to measure those. I'm going to get off my soapbox now, but as a learning professional, I'm clearly passionate about creating a culture of learning. But honestly, it's not just for the sake of learning, although that's obviously important to me. Organizations are more agile, they're more innovative, and they show continuous improvement when they can implement this robust culture of learning. And studies also show that when that's sort of stagnant or even maybe declining, what happens is that within 3 to 5 years, your company is going to show a pretty dramatic decrease in creativity and innovation. And unfortunately, that's not always something we look to measure until it's too late. So that's why I think it's really important that we focus on growing and cultivating that culture of learning. I've mentioned a lot of resources today, so those are going to be in the show notes for you. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, and you can interact when this podcast comes out. We have posts on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, because I would really love to hear your thoughts and ideas on this. Thank you all for listening. I know your time is a gift, and I really thank you for choosing to spend it with me. So be sure to comment, like, or subscribe and rate on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.